Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is! Drawing Board or...
Miro! All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I thought because I could hyper-focus and I could really excel at things and get things done when I wanted to and when I was interested, I thought that meant I didn't have ADHD.
Hello and welcome to the Women and ADHD podcast. I am your host, Katie Weber. I'd like to quickly share a review from the Apple Podcast platform written by a listener called Brain Stuck on Multiball, who writes, insightful and connecting. I've been listening to this since my diagnosis a month and a half ago at 45. It has brought me so much clarity, laughter, and insight to me. Aw, thank you so much. I'm so glad you found this podcast, and your reviews and ratings really play a huge part in getting this podcast noticed by other women like you who have recently been diagnosed and will definitely see themselves in these interviews. And a reminder, if you're a talker like I am and you prefer to leave verbal feedback, you can now go to my website and leave me a voicemail message at womenandadhd.com/voicemail. I may even share it in a future episode. You can find that link also in the show notes. This is episode 33, in which I interview the wonderful Jess Keough. Jess is the founder of The Body Positive, a counseling practice built on the principles of unconditional self-acceptance and body positivity. Jess is a qualified mental health and counseling professional with a degree in psychological science and a bachelor's degree in communications. This is a really special episode for me, as you will soon find out. Jess and I talk all about her own hunch that she might have ADHD and how that came about. And we also talk about how her ADHD has shown up for her in her life and in her career. Now, at the time of our conversation, she had not yet been diagnosed, but she has since been officially diagnosed with ADHD and is now on medication. And she recently wrote to me to say, Katie, I just cannot believe how my life has changed now that I'm medicated. I cannot tell you how much easier life is. Thank you so much for playing a huge part in creating this awareness for me and actually being the catalyst for getting diagnosed. So yeah, that felt awesome to hear. Jess is such an amazing soul, and we basically laugh our way through this whole interview, so I hope you find it entertaining as well. Enjoy.
Awesome. Are you excited? Are you nervous?
I'm so excited. Yeah. I keep holding myself back from messaging you things that pop up, like, oh my God, Katie, this happened. Does this mean I've got ADHD?
I know, right? I feel like I'm your midwife, your ADHD midwife.
Totally. And I'm like, boundaries, Jess, boundaries.
Okay, so full disclosure before we get started. Jess is a body positive counselor and coach, and I interviewed her along with my co-host Melissa Sacolario on my other podcast, Hello Body. And so we had started following each other, I guess, like, you know, leading up to that interview. And I you know, as I started posting more and more on my Instagram account about ADHD, Jess was like liking all of my Instagram posts about ADHD. And I had said to Melissa, I was like, I think we need to chat about this. Yeah. And so when we did finally connect, I think it's safe to say we live on opposite sides of the planet, but we are basically the same person. Is that correct?
100%, 100%. And also the introversion stuff that you post as well. I'm like, yep, that's me.
Right? Mm. Yeah. So after we recorded the Hello Body podcast, I said, Jess, I have to get you on to my Women and ADHD podcast because I want to hear all about this kind of real-time discovery that you've been going through, because this is all fairly new to you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still fairly new to me. I joke about the fact that like, I've only been diagnosed for 6 months in human years, but like in ADHD years, 6 months is like the equivalent of a decade given how much you research. So,
100%. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. So, it is amazing. Like once those connections start happening and once those light bulbs start going off, you just like, you go into hyperspeed and then you're like, do I have ADHD? Yeah. I'm like, this is clearly a sign that you have ADHD if you're hyper-focused.
Absolutely. And you don't want to like, I don't want to over-identify with it and be like, oh, that's me. That's me. It just makes so much sense. Like, it's just like everything's fallen into place.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable.
I know. And there is that fear. I think a lot of the women I talk to sort of had that feeling of kind of like, you know, maybe I'm making too much out of this.
Yes.
Maybe I'm looking for an answer.
Yes.
But at the same time, like it really feels like all of these seemingly random anomalies in your life can be traced back to this one explanation. And it is like, it's overwhelming to say the least.
It's so overwhelming. And it's like, wow, like maybe it isn't just because I can't be a proper adult and like keep my room clean. Like maybe there's something there, particularly since I'm constantly trying to be neat and tidy and it just doesn't work. I just can't organize myself. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So let's just get started with what I like to ask all of my guests at the very beginning, which is kind of what first made you start to think that you had ADHD and where are you in this diagnosis journey?
Sure. So look, until recently, I didn't really know much about ADHD. So, you know, even after completing a whole psych degree and studying and working in mental health for years, I'm only just grasping what ADHD actually is. I always connected ADHD with, you know, visions of a young child, generally a boy, if I'm going to stereotype, who couldn't sit still and who had difficulties concentrating and talking in class and disrupting people. So I guess the short answer is that I've only recently had a very strong inkling that my symptoms were ADHD that have been previously diagnosed as depression. And most recently, you know, a potential bipolar 2 diagnosis. I did speak with my psychiatrist about 2 years ago about the potential of me having ADHD, and he actually suggested that I try medication because he sort of identified with the things that I was telling him as well. You know, but we were tossing up between, is this ADHD or is this sort of like a rapid cycling bipolar 2 disorder? What's going on? And he's like, well, let's just give ADHD medication a try, and I got cold feet and I sort of didn't want to do it. I don't know why. I didn't want me to change, you know. I didn't want to lose my spark or I don't know. I don't know what I was afraid of. I just didn't want my ups and my impulsivity and hyper focus and all that to go, because I, you know, in most of the part it's quite enjoyable and productive.
I used to think it was like, it was the only thing I had going for me. I didn't want to dull that
100%
because I felt, I was terrified. I mean, I was terrified of medication because I thought I was going to feel like I'd be on cocaine, you know, like that's kind of how I assumed it would be a stimulant would be. And I was like, that is one thing I do not need.
Exactly. That's exactly right. I didn't want that part of me to go, because I was like, I really like that part of me. So I just stuck with my medication that was an antidepressant, which has been helping with any of the down periods I've had really, really well. So I just kind of left it, and I tried to manage my way through the symptoms, which, you know, is, you know, I'm really quite impulsive, as I've said. Find it really, really hard to relax. I hate relaxing, but I have to force myself to relax. You know, that relationship sensitivity, which thanks to you, and I forget who you were talking to about rejection sensitive dysphoria, but I relate to that a lot. You know, boredom can become really painful for me. Like, it's actually painful. I hate it so much. You know, that lack of organization, despite I'm constantly trying different organization systems. I'm constantly doing a new to-do list or a new diary or a new planning system and just chopping and changing to try and find something that works. But, you know, it's fun for a few days, and then I'm like, oh, this is boring. I'll just drop it. And then I, you know, chaos again. And, you know, starting hobbies with vigor, you know, starting, I remember I started surfing and I'm like, oh, I can't wait, I'm going to be a surfer. And then you just drop it like a hot potato when it's, you know, when it becomes a bit boring or you don't really resonate with it as much as you thought you would.
After you've already spent, you know, hundreds of dollars.
Oh yeah, I bought a wetsuit. I bought a proper wetsuit because it was winter. I got a proper board. It was just ridiculous. And I guess, you know, my favorite symptom that I'm identifying with is that hyperfocus, which allows me to be really productive in a sea of like my disorganization, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really, yeah, it feels like that. Those are the moments when I am on fire.
Yes.
And I'm so interested when I hear women who were either diagnosed or were convinced that they had bipolar 2, because that is what I thought I had as well, because you go through that pendulum swing with such intensity from hyperfocus to then the depression and the lethargy and the sort of feeling of like just like absolute piece of shit syndrome.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think I forget who you're talking to. I've actually binged all your podcasts. It's typical. But you were speaking to someone about, what was it? Depression due to lack of stimulation or something. And I was like, oh, I so get that. I so hear that. Like when I'm not stimulated and when I'm bored, I'm depressed. Like it's so interesting hearing all these things.
And you go from like 0 to 100 too. Yeah. It's not like you're sort of like, oh, I'm mildly depressed or I'm mildly bored. You go to like, oh my God, I can't stand. Like when you were like, I hate relaxing. I'm like, yeah, exactly. Like who says that?
But
yeah, it's really fascinating why that is, like why relaxation is so difficult for us.
It's stressful.
I think is interesting. Yeah, it is.
Relaxation is stressful. And that's the opposite of what it should be. But I guess what really opened my eyes was speaking to my colleague at work. So he asked me what I was doing after work, and I said, oh, I'm going to go home and I'm going to try and relax because I hate relaxing, but I need to force myself to do it. And he sort of sarcastically said, oh, I have no idea what that feels like. And he sort of shared with me his late diagnosis of ADHD only a year prior and how it completely changed his life. And we got talking about symptoms, and I was like, oh, my God, this guy's me. You know, he's describing my situation. And then, Katie, I must say, you know, a whole heap of what you were posting on Instagram, as you said before, was really resonating with me, and I was just like, I didn't even know these symptoms were ADHD related. I had no idea. But I guess when you talk about the hyperfocus, that was my sort of that I thought because I could hyperfocus and I could really excel at things and get things done when I wanted to and when I was interested, I thought that meant I didn't have ADHD. You know, I excelled at uni because I love the content so much. And I got so absorbed in it. But, you know, I'd sit there for hours studying or working on assignments, not going to the bathroom, forgetting to eat, ignoring my family because I was just so focused and just so in the moment. But then on the other hand, subjects like statistics, which I had to do for psychology, I just couldn't do it. And it would make me so tired and I'd get so upset because it was like there was this deficit that I wasn't interested in it and my brain just could not organize the learning it had to do around that subject. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And when I recently went back to look at my report cards, it was so funny. Like, my report cards were either D's and F's or A plus, I got an A plus every semester in French, and the French teacher was always like, "Très bien," like, "Wonderful job." And the other thing was fascinating to me was the absences. Like in high school, my geography class that I always failed, I had like 35 absences per semester. And then French, I had no absences. So it was just it's really like a light switch. You know, you're either like so on or just like, nope, can't do it.
Yes, exactly. It's so interesting. I was the same with high school. I failed my HSC because I liked one subject at school and that was English, and I got a high distinction. And then the rest, I was like, nah, hate it, failed. Just couldn't do it.
And I think that is, I've just learned so much about why we beat up on ourselves, because we sort of have, not only are people telling us our whole lives, just do it, just study more, just figure it out.
Yes.
But I think we also in our younger years or even as adults, we don't necessarily know what is going to be interesting and what isn't. And so I feel like there's that sense of disconnection too, where it's like, well, why can't I do statistics? I should be, I'm a smart person. That's the thing. The other thing too, which is sort of like, I'm a smart person. Why didn't I know this? Why can't I figure this out? Like you even said, like you have all these advanced psych degrees. Like, how did I not know this? How did this never occur to me until now? And there's that sense of just like constant confusion as to who you are and why you're such this puzzle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And when you try and figure it out, it's like there's a block there that you just can't get past it. So it's so bizarre.
Yeah. Where are you in your diagnosis journey? Have you been officially diagnosed or are you still waiting?
Okay. So yes, long story short, I've just discovered all this stuff about myself. So I've got an appointment with my psychiatrist in a couple of weeks and I'm going to talk to him about this revelation and, next steps and maybe trying medication or maybe seeing what options I have. I'm not sure obviously what he'll say, but I'll go from there.
Are you worried that he's going to say no?
I'm worried a little bit because it would explain so many things that I actually genuinely struggle with, like things that just make life really difficult, like my lack of organization, like all the things that I try really hard at that I just can't get, like keeping the house tidy so my husband doesn't get annoyed at me.
Absolutely. That's a huge thing. Yeah.
And why is it so hard? I absolutely love having a neat house, a neat, tidy, organized house. I love it, but I'm so bad at it. I just can't do it.
Well, you're bad at it because it's a boring, terrible job. Like, why is that something that you feel like you even need to be good at? That's the other thing. I think like as women, we have this enormous amount of pressure to be homemakers. And then if you take 1 minute to objectively look at what this task is, you're like, of course I'm terrible at this.
I know. This is not bringing me towards my goals. I do not want to be doing it.
Right? But I read an article recently about how important it is for the ADHD brain to have minimalism and tidiness in the home and like why we all love Marie Kondo.
Yes.
And there's that disconnect. Like I just need to throw everything out and start fresh. And like when I was younger in my 20s, I moved every 2 years and it was great. I loved purging. I loved getting rid of everything. Yes. And always hated unpacking. But now like as I'm older and we have kids and we're more settled, we've lived in this house now for 10 years and it is driving me bonkers.
Really?
Just like thinking about the attic and thinking about the clutter and I'm so overwhelmed. I keep saying to my husband, I'm like, I just want to get a dumpster and just throw everything out and start fresh.
Yeah, you should do that.
I want to live in a trailer basically. Like I want to like, that's my dream is to just like get a tiny house and have one coffee mug and just like keep moving.
Oh,
Thelma Louise style.
That would be so good. That would be so good. I hear you.
Anyway, I was going to ask you about the whole doctor visit, because mm-hmm. I personally, like when I was having my intake appointment, like mm-hmm. I brought all of these tests and all of these self-assessments, and I came armed with all this paperwork because I was terrified yeah. that she was going to say, no, this isn't what you have. And yeah. then something that I felt so keenly, like this was everything. This yes. explained everything. Yeah. And if it wasn't ADHD, I didn't know what I was going to do. And so I showed up like yeah. just absolute. And I also was worried I was going to forget everything too.
That's what I'm worried about.
That happened. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And so I showed up with all this paperwork and I like was like, yeah, I just wanted you to know that I did these tests. And I did. I'm like so earnestly trying to explain everything yeah. to her. And she was basically like, you had me at hello. Like, look at you with your tests. Of course you have it. But I made her say it out loud too. That was the other thing. I made, before I left the office, I said, you have to tell me out loud that I have ADHD and what yeah. type it is. Because if you don't, and it's just sort of assumed, I'm yep. going to leave here thinking I've misconstrued or I misunderstood. Like yep. it's so important for us to like have that labeling and 100%. To have that diagnosis.
Yeah, that definite answer.
Right. But yet yep. at the same time, I don't think a doctor's diagnosis is really the end all. Like, I don't think that's the beginning of your journey. I think your own diagnosis is really the beginning
yeah.
of your journey, because yeah. you identify with it so strongly that then you start to think, okay, now what do I do? You know, yeah. do I want medication? Do I not? What's working? Yeah. What's not working? Yeah. Oh, look at all of these things that I sort of already intuitively do anyway.
Absolutely.
You know, like I feel like I say this all the time, but I feel like the diagnosis is half of the treatment, you know?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Like I feel, you know, so many of my guests say like, oh, I'm not officially diagnosed. Is that okay? And I'm just like, girl, like, you know.
That's what I said to you.
Yeah, I know, right?
And exactly. You want to wait till I'm diagnosed.
yeah. And I feel like that is so unfortunate and yet so obvious as to why people with ADHD feel like they need to get that diagnosis, and because yeah. we have so little self-trust, but at the same time, like we yeah. know ourselves so well that by the yes. time we get to the doctor's office with all of our paperwork, like yeah. it's so clear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So no, I definitely hear that. I'm like, oh, I'm nervous for my appointment because I'm like, what if he says, no, you're just really disorganized. Oh, you're really yeah, lazy. Right.
Or everybody. This is every, I mean, that's the thing with motherhood too. Oh, all mothers struggle, yeah. you know, like that feeling yeah. of like, oh, you're exaggerating this
yes.
and it's really not that bad. And yes. I think that's something that so many of us dealt with, especially mothers yeah. who were misdiagnosed with depression, or not even, I don't know if it's a misdiagnosis, but you know, for so many of us who were treated with depression and anxiety
yes.
from postpartum
yes.
And that feeling again of like, is it really that bad, or am yep. I just overinflating it? And
exactly.
Am I even struggling? You know, is this normal?
Absolutely. And, yeah. All that questioning. And as you say, the lack of trust, because, you know, we change our mind on things and drop things like a hot potato. So it's like, is future Jess going to feel this way? You know, do I trust myself to, it's so interesting how we don't
yeah.
trust.
Absolutely. And I love the idea of like, present Jess and
yep.
future Jess. I yep. talk that way all the time yep. with my kids and my husband about like, you know, and I wonder, like, I feel that very fragmented that way too, because
yeah.
it's like, am I setting myself up for success, or is tomorrow me going to be really angry with what
yes.
I have chosen to do with my
yeah.
time right now?
Yeah.
But again, that feeling of like, I don't trust myself. And I, yeah, like you said, like my interests and my direction could change on a dime, and I have no idea what's going to spark it or why or how I'm going to pivot. But
yeah, yep. exactly. It's so interesting. Even things like social, organizing social plans and stuff. It's like, oh yeah, let's do this tomorrow. We'll meet up then. And then tomorrow comes and future Jess is like, why did I make plans? I actually hate doing things.
Right? The age-old question, am I an introvert or an extrovert? Oh, I have no idea.
100%. Because sometimes I'm like, I'm 100% an extrovert. I'm so motivated. I'm so into being around people. I get energy from it. And then other times I'm like, I'm so drained from people. I need to just go into my room and watch Netflix for like 3 weeks.
Right? Yeah. I know. This is why I hate personality tests in general, because I feel like personality tests are always like, would you describe yourself as highly organized or would you describe yourself as a chaotic mess? And I'm like, I am both all times.
100%. At work, I'm the most organized person. At home, I'm the most disorganized person. Like, I just can't choose.
Yeah. When I lived alone, I met my husband, we moved in together when I was 27. So I spent 5 or 6 years living alone. And I was incredibly tidy and organized when I lived alone. Ooh. Because I knew that if I left dishes in the sink, mm-hmm. I would never get to them. So I would wash my dish as soon as I used it. And put it away. And I was like, almost thought I had OCD because I also would like when I would unpack from when I would move all the time, mm-hmm. I would unpack my books and I would like have everything be alphabetized by author's last name. And I've seen people with ADHD, like you look at their bookshelf and they have like everything color coded or like there's ways in which we get like super hyper organized.
Yes.
But then when I moved in with my husband and he started putting books, he was combining all of our books together for the first time and he was putting them on the shelf and he was putting them like willy-nilly, not even like in the same direction. Some of the letters were facing one way and some of the letters were facing the other way. No. And I just like, I couldn't take it. I don't, right? I was like, you feel that pain. I was like, I don't know what to do with this. I just give up. And I gave, and I will never look at the books again. you just shut down.
It's so funny because you do get hung up on that sort of stuff. And then your partner's like, how can you be hung up on this stuff when you leave all your crap everywhere? It's like, I just can.
Yeah. But it's like you said, it's like that feeling of constantly being in a state of organizing, even though, or because we feel so chaotic. I mean, it's they say with kids, like shoveling snow in a snowstorm. Yeah. Although I don't know, do you have that in balmy Australia?
No, I don't.
Do you have that phrase? But like, have you heard that phrase before? Have you heard that idiom before?
Really.
Snow in a snowstorm?
Is it like shoveling deck chairs on the Titanic? Shuffling
probably
deck chairs on the Titanic?
Yeah, probably the same idea, right? Okay. Which basically what's the freaking point?
Yes, that's
and,
exactly
you know,
right.
And right. And so you throw babies into the mix and then you're just like, yeah, forget it. I can't. I'm done. I give up.
Yeah. Totally.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you're a regular listener of this podcast, you know I'm very open about my own experiences with therapy. I've been seeing the same therapist for years, and in fact, it was my therapist who first suggested I had ADHD and set me on this personal path of transformation. But it also took a while to find the right fit for me, which is why it's so awesome that online resources like BetterHelp exist. The service is available for clients worldwide, so there's a broad range of expertise, which may not be available locally for a lot of us. Also, it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. If you visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily, there are actually quite a few reviews that specifically reference help with ADHD. As a special offer for listeners of the Women and ADHD podcast, you'll get 10% off your first month. Simply sign up at BetterHelp.com. That's HELP.com/womenADHD.
So looking back at your own childhood, what are some things about growing up that you look back and think, oh yes, of course, that was ADHD. How did nobody know?
How did nobody know? I guess definitely my report cards. A lot of them were creative but needs to focus, has potential but needs to focus, easily distracted, needs more attention to detail, that sort of stuff. So definitely that. Also just really getting quite I guess not upset, but just really agitated about being bored. Like I remember my mum saying, Jess, you're going to have to sometimes get used to being by yourself and not having things to constantly do. But I just found that so painful. And when I would get bored, I would feel really, even as a child, I'd feel really depressed and just really like, what's wrong with me? I just can't stand not having stimulation, I guess, that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess the report cards, the pain from boredom, more of my symptoms, I think, emerged. I think they were the main things, just thinking that I couldn't do things and having difficulty doing things, particularly things like maths, and just thinking I was really dumb, but then excelling in things like English, like just things just not really adding up for me. And because of that, I just wouldn't try. And I'd just be like, what's the point? I'm really bad at this. I'm not even going to try, because there was some sort of blockage there in my brain or something that I just couldn't organize my mind to do certain things like maths. And then I guess, you know, as I've gotten older, it's been sort of the impulsivity, and the hyper-focus that's sort of taken over in terms of symptoms.
Yeah, I think I remember when I first took the self-test, I was so surprised at the ways in which, because, you know, I originally took an adult ADHD self-test from Attitude mm-hmm. magazine that was for men and women. Uh-huh. And I didn't score. I think I scored like a 66% or something.
Okay. Yeah.
But there were a lot, you know, because there were a lot of questions about physical hyperactivity that I didn't relate to, about yes. like feeling jittery and stuff.
Yeah.
But then when I took the woman one, it was so much more about impulsive shopping or
yes.
balancing the checkbook. You know, things like, yeah, where I was like, oh, okay, I see this now. Yeah. And then yeah. they were asking things like, do you hate the idea of spontaneously having people come over to your house? And okay. I was like, oh my, yes.
What is with that though? Because I'm the same. I'm like, I love being stimulated, but then if someone pops over unexpected, I'm like, can this please not be happening right now? Or if my husband invites people over, like, oh, so-and-so's coming over this afternoon. I'm like, why? Why did you do that?
Right. I think it has a lot to do with, like, masking, you know, and this idea that you can mm. kind of, you have this yeah. public persona yeah. of being together. And if somebody finds out that you're a hot
yeah.
mess,
yeah.
then that would be disastrous. Yeah. Like, I feel like we all kind of have this feeling like we don't quite know how we're holding it all together, but we yep. are just holding it all together. And
absolutely.
So whenever you throw something into the mix, if it's a baby or, you know, something like you get into a fender bender or something, yep. and then all of a sudden you're just like, no, I can't handle it.
Yep.
Like you feel like you are, you know, at the very, very
yes.
top of the cup, and any kind of bump, the water's going to start to overflow.
Yep. Yes, that's so true.
Right. So that's like, you know, having somebody come over and, yeah. and having your house maybe not be a disaster, or your
yeah.
toilet's disgusting or whatever, you know, you're just like, oh my God, it's the end of the
yeah.
world.
Yeah, exactly.
And my, I remember my doctor asking me too about traffic. She was like, you know, cause I was like, I'm not hyperactive. I don't know what you're talking about. And then she asked me like, what, you know, how do you feel when you're stuck in traffic? And I'm like, I want to rip
yeah.
the steering wheel
yeah.
out of the dashboard.
Yep.
And I realized yep. like, oh, right. Like rage yep. is actually a form of hyperactivity.
Yes.
If you, and kind of like it's almost like a combination of hyperactivity and impulsivity in a way.
Yes, absolutely.
And, right. So yeah, I was like, yeah, I've got a little bit of that quick to rage issue.
Yeah,
I've always
yeah.
had that,
fine.
Even when I was a kid.
Yeah, fine.
What are some moments in your life where you feel like, looking back, you think, you know, that your symptoms were strongest?
Yeah.
Or, you know, because I know for so many of us, it was like, yeah, I pretty much managed. And then I had a baby and everything fell apart.
Well, that's interesting, actually, because I feel like ever since having children, I feel like my symptoms have become more at the forefront. So one example that really sticks out to me, which is, I actually thought this was a symptom of bipolar. one day I used to have these big ideas. Well, I still have these big ideas. And you know, one day I decided I'd come off maternity leave. I'd gone back to work and I decided I want to take over my boss's business. So back in another lifetime, I worked in public relations and I was an account director in a small agency, which I loved. And I had a bee in my bonnet. I was like, I want my own business. And I wanted it then and there. And, you know, my colleague who's now one of my best friends and I decided, you know, we could do this. We could run this business together. It'd be amazing. We'd do our own hours. We'd run it the way we wanted. So at the time, my boss was actually a little bit complacent about her business. So it wasn't a completely far out idea. She sort of kept talking about how she was kind of over it, was thinking of shutting it down. So I was like, yes, I'm doing this. I'm going to make this business mine. So mind you, I was also working part-time for her. I was studying psych full-time and I had a baby that was like, 4 months. So where this business was going to fit in, I'm not sure. It just was. I was going to make it work. So the night that I had this big epiphany, I was going to take over the business. I couldn't sleep. I got up at 4 a.m. because I wasn't sleeping and I started texting my family about how I was going to do this. I walked to my parents' house, who were about an hour's walk away, to tell them because it was too early to call them. It was like that scene in Silver Linings Playbook where Bradley Cooper has a revelation and he wakes up his parents in the middle of the night. It was hilarious. but they're used to those sort of antics, so it was okay. And then for the rest of the weekend, I put together my pitch. I did a big keynote presentation. I hyper-focused the whole weekend on that. It was awesome. The pitch was awesome. The presentation was awesome. Monday morning came and my friend was like, Jess, do you think we should just think about this a little bit more? And I was like, no, this is happening today. The thought of putting that off was painful to me. Like, there is no way I'm putting this off. We're doing it right now. And we did the presentation and my boss was like, can I think about this? And so eventually she said no, that she wanted to keep the business. And then I dropped it like a hot potato. I was like, okay, cool. Next idea. You know, what was that? But I guess, you know, there's other smaller signs. Like, I've got probably literally 100 books on my Kindle that I've started that I haven't finished. You know, I'm always doing courses. I'm doing my postgrad psych studies at the moment, but I'm also finishing my intuitive eating certification and studying another course in weight management psychology and trying to do another booster business course. Like, it's just, I've always got things on the go. And there's always one relatively big thing happening. And if there isn't something happening, I need something to be happening.
Yeah, I know. It's dizzying when you think about all of the different, you know, not only just like the different careers that we've had over the years.
Oh, yeah.
But exactly. Also that same, like, I feel like I am always in the middle of getting some sort of certification or, you know, or do it like, you know, last week I was like, you know, I hired this business coach who's helping me really just sort of stay on point. And like her job is to remind me to just do one thing, you know, just do one thing and everything else gets to go on this list. Oh. And like, you know, I had to call her last week and be like, so I accidentally made a merch site this week.
Oh my God, you spoke in with those t-shirts and stuff.
I know. And right? I just was like, I just kind of fell down this hole where I had this idea and I was like, I can't not run with it. Like, I have to do it. And then, you know, whatever happens, happens. What? And then I emerged at the end and was like, oh no, now I have to tell my business coach that I spent all this time doing this.
That is so funny. But A, that is awesome. And B, I reckon that's where all the good ideas come from, when you just go, oh, this is my idea. I'm going to push through it. I'm going to see it to the end. And then if it's crap, then cool, I'll move on to the next one. Like, we don't have those attachments to ideas like other people do. Like, see what happens.
That's a great point. Right? Yeah. We're just throwing shit against the wall left and right and whatever sticks.
See what sticks. Definitely.
That's true. And you know, the one thing, good thing about having grit like that is, like you said, like, if it doesn't work out, you just move on.
Whatever.
You're fine. Like, I don't dwell on anything. I don't dwell on relationships. I don't, like, I can ruminate for weeks about something, but like, I don't dwell. There's a difference. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think we can move on quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And it's such an emotional roller coaster because like we talk about this and it's like, yes, like, you know, we're talking about this. And I'm like, yeah, this is the superpower part of ADHD. Yeah. And I understand why people are always talking about how it's a superpower. And I love it. Yeah. I love everything about it. And then you're like, oh, but then there's the grief. And then there's how much I struggled.
Yep.
And what do I do with all that?
Yeah. It's so true. It's so true. And just the contrast between your productive self and your switched on self, and then the other self that is a bit disorganized and that can't figure some things out. Like there's just that disconnect between the two selves that I find hard. It's a bit of a roller coaster.
And also not only that, but then realizing that the excitement, the thrill is in creating things. Yeah. And so once they are created, once they are completed, you're no longer interested. No, you move on, right?
Oh my God, that's so true.
Right? And it's so frustrating because I just sort of made this connection recently where I'm like, no wonder we all have such terrible self-esteem. We don't take any time to appreciate anything we've done because that is not exciting to us. It's the chase and the creation that is exciting. But then the minute it's done and somebody's like, you did a good job. And you're like, yeah, whatever. You're moving on.
You've just spoken to my thoughts. Like that is so true. You've hit the nail on the head with that. I will do something and one of my best friends will go, oh my God, just that's awesome. I'm like, yeah, next thing, whatever. Like,
right.
We recently sold our house and everyone's like, oh, that's amazing. I'm like, yeah, cool. Now we've got to buy one. It's like, I don't care. What's the next thing?
Mm-hmm. And it's the same. Yeah. I think it's the same thing with just general compliments, you know, like somebody can tell me I'm a good mom over and over and over again. I'm not going to believe them until like, I figure out, like, I think I'm a good mom, but you know, it's like something about people's compliments mean nothing to me. Like, there's just like this mental block.
That's actually really interesting. Yeah.
And so I'm curious if it's the fact that like feeling accomplished, I think it's the fact that, to be honest, it's more exciting to be depressed. Like it's more exciting to be, what's the word? Like angsty, you know, and it's not exciting to us to be fulfilled.
No. It's just that stimulation, whether it's good or whether it's bad, it's that stimulation for us that is rewarding, I guess.
So I also want to talk to you about dieting because, you know, we share so much in our work about our own history with dieting and body image. Yep. And I feel like I, again, like had so many light bulbs about dieting, you know, and that all or nothing mentality and why I did what I did over the years and why diets appeal so much to our brains and that idea of like, oh my goodness, my whole life is out of control. Yep. The one thing that's going to fix everything is if I start weighing and tracking and counting and, you know, working on losing weight and all of that stuff. And so I'm curious now looking back with an ADHD lens, you know, how do you feel about your own history with your body image and kind of what revelations are you
I feel like a lot of it could be explained by this. I feel like I can't actually remember when I wasn't on a diet or a diet plan or something where I'd write something out or track my food or have some sort of control over what I was doing with my body, because it gave me that sense of control in so much chaos, I think. I also think because I did struggle a lot with binging, a lot, and I'm wondering if that was because I couldn't handle boredom, you know, and things like eating in the car and things like that when you're driving, you know, I used to do that a lot because I'm in the car. This is so freaking boring. I can't just be in the car. What else can I be doing? And now I listen to podcasts and do things like, I don't know, I'll drink as much water as I can or whatever. There always has to be some goal while I'm doing something. But eating and that, I guess, the dopamine rush you get from binging and that, I think that explains a lot of that as well, and that I needed to be stimulated and I couldn't just be sitting there driving. I had to be getting a hit of dopamine somewhere. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When I'm long distance driving by myself, I always have to have, usually I'll buy the biggest bag of baby carrots I can find and a couple bags of popcorn because I need to constantly be eating and I need to constantly be crunching. And I sort of always thought it was like to keep me focused, you know, to keep me awake and to keep me focused on the road. Yeah. But if I had anything more substantial, like I would get so, like my stomach would hurt so much. Like I was like, I need to find something that's empty enough that I can continue eating it throughout this 6-hour car ride without feeling like I'm going to puke.
That's so interesting. That's so funny because I went through a stage, I've had many stages, where I was like, I'm going to do, in Australia, we have this thing called crunch and sip for kids at recess, at sort of morning tea, where they have to bring vegetables or fruit to school and there's a set time for them to eat it to increase their nutrients. So I was like, I'm going to do crunch and sip in my car. So I'm just going to have vegetables and I'm just going to eat heaps of vegetables to keep me from getting bored. And that lasted literally a day and then I dropped it.
But it is interesting too, looking at it through this new lens and looking at dopamine and how food and dopamine, what that plays in our lives, especially as dieters, because I always felt like binging was a symptom of the deprivation of dieting.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that was sort of what I believed. That was what I taught my clients. Yes. And I still do to a certain degree. Yeah. But I also realize I'm also much more in tune with kind of like, when am I eating and why? Like I noticed since we've been doing so much remote learning that like as soon as I get off of a call or a Zoom call or anything that's like really socially intense, I immediately go eat food. And I was like, that's right. Well, I was like, no, I think it's really calming. I mean, I think that is, you know, food is a really simple, easy way to boost your dopamine and get that calming feeling.
Yep.
And so I often wonder, because I was a nighttime binger, that I think that there's something about food, just like alcohol, that you like, you're like, this is a great way for me to calm down my brain.
Yes.
But then at the same time, because you're a dieter, if you start eating food and you know you shouldn't, then your brain starts getting ramped up with all the guilt and shame. Yep. And then it just becomes like you're on this hamster wheel of like, I'm trying to calm myself down. So I'm going to eat more.
Yep.
And there's that sort of like that reptilian part of you that wants to calm yourself down. And then there's the diet part of you that's like, this is a terrible thing to do. I'm getting all worked up over it. Yep. And so I don't know what I think anymore, honestly. I have no idea because I feel like the concept of binge eating, especially since I now know how common it is for women who have ADHD. And I feel like there are so many factors at work. I mean, you think about just the inattentiveness with which we eat, right?
Yep.
So I've really had to reevaluate intuitive eating. And sort of what I've struggled with intuitive eating, because I've really have struggled in secret for all of these years as being a body positive, being Hayes, really sort of, you know, politically and philosophically really, really aligning with anti-diet philosophies, but at the same time, always feeling like I was a failure at intuitive eating because I can't tune into my hunger and fullness in a way that like, I still felt like I was doing it badly, you know? And I realize, you know, that's sort of the catch 22 with intuitive eating. You can't do it badly.
But
I also sort of felt like I wasn't happy. And that was something that I really struggled with for a long time, which was like, I feel like I've supposedly found this freedom. I wrote a book about freedom, but I didn't feel free. And so like, I just feel like this diagnosis has thrown everything up in the air. And like, I'm reevaluating so much, but I'm especially reevaluating, like, why do we binge eat? Like, what is the thing? Is it dopamine? Is it stimulation? Is it all of the above? Is it deprivation? Mm. Is it all like, there's, I don't freaking know. Like there's too many factors.
I feel like if you're dieting, you have got that deprivation and you are going to binge eat. That's just what's going to happen because that's what right. happens with restriction. That's going to happen. But then I think, as you say, there's a lot more other things at play. Like for me, the propensity for me to binge would be huge because I'd be restricting. So that was a huge part of my life. Now I've stopped the restricting. I wouldn't say that I would binge anymore. I would maybe eat because I'm bored though. So yeah, I wouldn't necessarily be binging and starting tomorrow because that's what grew from my deprivation. It's more, I'm really bored. I need to do something. Oh, I'm going to eat something. And, you know, sometimes I catch myself and go, oh, you're not really hungry. Just what else can we do to occupy our brain? But sometimes I'm just like, yeah, whatever, I'll just eat something. Do you know what I mean? Like not putting too much pressure on it.
That's a really good distinction. I shouldn't even be calling it binge eating because it's true. Like I often say that, you know, binge eating is more about how you feel while you're eating than it is what yes. you're eating. And yes. so I very quickly, when I left dieting, yes. I stopped binge eating because I no yes. longer felt guilt and I no longer felt like I needed to wake up the next morning and start fresh, like
oh,
you said.
God.
So the binge eating was gone in that sense of like, oh my God, I can't stop myself. I'm so out of control. I yes. feel terrible about myself. That was
yes.
stopped.
Yes.
But there was this feeling of like, I like to eat beyond yeah. fullness because I like how it feels, you know, like mm. there's something about eating beyond fullness that feels mm. good. And why does that feel good? And what is that? And then I have to unpack all of these sort of underlying societal guilt and shame with that, yes. you know, like, and, yes. and, you know, all of the messages that you receive over your life as a woman yep. that you're sort of like, oh, well, screw that. I'm going to do it anyway. And
absolutely.
But then at the same time being like, well, yeah, but I also feel terrible.
Yes. Absolutely.
and unpacking all of that sense of like, okay, what am I doing? Is this for my health? Is this for my size? You know, all of those questions that you yes. have to ask yourself in diet recovery anyway. Exactly. Now I'm like, oh, I'm overthinking freaking everything.
Yeah. I know.
Because that's what we do.
Yeah, we do. We do. We do. And it's really hard to deliver a straight answer because there's you're bringing in all these factors and it's just like, oh, yeah. Well,
and then you like Google ADHD nutrition and it's a mess because all of a sudden now you're getting all of this, you know, all of this information about what vitamins and supplements you're supposed to take and how you're supposed yes. to do this and avoid sugar and all of this other yes. stuff. And I'm like, you know, I don't want to get pulled no. into that diet mentality of no. like, oh, I have to do all of these things and I have to do 150% yes. or nothing.
Yes, exactly.
Right. It really appeals to that diet or mindset.
It does. And I think we can also trick ourselves into going, oh, this is the sort of thing we should follow for our ADHD brains. Okay, I'm going to do that. When really it's probably because we're sort of focused on wanting to get back into that dieting mentality because, you know, that's where our brain goes all the time and it's hard to sort of get away from that.
Yeah. Or just, you know, to fight the chaos. Like this is what is, yes. this is finally the solution to all of my problems. You know, this is how we always feel about things. We get so excited. And so it's like, oh my goodness,
so
you know, fish oil is suddenly going to be the thing that figures out everything, you know, and living on this planet long enough to know that, okay, this is not going to be the solution to all of my exactly. problems. But exactly. at the same time, you know, I also like to geek out about the science of certain supplements and what yeah. they might do for my brain.
Yes.
And, oh my God, it's exhausting.
Exactly. It is exhausting, isn't it? It's exhausting. Gosh.
Yeah, I know. And I see so many women in ADHD Facebook groups who are struggling so much with dieting and body image and binge eating and desperately wanting to lose weight. And then it's like you get 80 answers from other ADHD women and it's who are just like, oh, well, have you tried melatonin? Oh, have you tried, you know, you have to do this. Oh, you need to intermittent fast. You need to do this. And it's like, oh, I did paleo or keto. That's the other one where it's like, oh, keto. That's going to solve everything. And you're just like, oh my God, this is like, it's just so tiring and exhausting. But I also sort of feel like it's still a puzzle to be figured out. Like I can't stay away, you know?
Yeah,
like
I can't agree.
Stay away from it.
Absolutely.
Because I still feel like I'm fascinated by solving this puzzle.
Yes. And I guess that's difficult when there aren't, you know, specific answers. We can't find the specific answers, so we constantly want to try and find them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why, our personalities are so driven to solving puzzles, because nothing is more of a confusing puzzle than ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So true.
Now I asked my guests this, but I asked my guests if they could rename ADHD to something else, what would you call it? I'm not sure how, if you feel like you've got an answer for this, because I feel like it's so new for you.
I do.
You do? Oh, of course, you're such a kicker. I knew you were.
Mate, I've studied for my test.
You were cramming, for sure, yeah.
I was. I have come up with dynamic attention and activity spectrum because I don't want to call it a disorder, because I think that promotes stigma and that makes people shy away from getting a diagnosis. And, you know, it is dynamic and it does have to do with attention and activity, and it is a spectrum. So there's my answer. Dynamic attention and activity spectrum.
I love that. And I love the fact that you chose spectrum. And yes. I was like, oh, I should have known. Of course, you've got your psych background. Because I think that's something that has been really eye-opening to me on my own ADHD journey, which is just the connection with all of the different neurodivergent brains and diagnoses and how much they overlap, you know, and how I feel like I am part of this much bigger, diverse community that includes autism spectrum and you know, that there's like, I feel like there's so many different thinkers and we all kind of fall into this jumbled mess.
Yes.
Absolutely. I think spectrum is such a great word for it. And I love that we all kind of are finding our place somewhere within that large spectrum.
Yes. Yeah. And it looks different, I guess, for so many people. So you can't really pigeonhole what it looks like. It's different.
Right. Mm. And I wonder when I tell people, because I'm so open about it now, you know, when I tell people like, yes, I was diagnosed with ADHD, I'm quite curious, like, what do they think that means? You know, because absolutely. I had so many misconceptions in the beginning. Yes. And so I'm always wondering, like, they obviously have no idea what I'm talking about, and they don't have 2 hours to listen to go on and on and on about executive function and hyperfocus and emotional regulation and RSD. Like, you know, so what are they thinking? Are they just like, well, you don't seem hyper to me.
Yeah. I'm so with you on that, because obviously I've been blabbing this to everyone now that I've diagnosed myself. And I'm like, what do people think? And a lot of the answers I get back is, why do you think you have that? And I'm like, I don't have an hour and a half to explain to you why. Just believe me.
Google it.
Yeah, exactly. Google it. And then I also think, I always think, people will think that I'm over exaggerating or just throwing a diagnosis around, you know. I often do think that. But
everybody's a little ADHD. It's because of our phones, right?
I know, that's what my mum says to me. She's like, oh, Jess, everyone's a little bit like that. I'm like, no, mum, that's not it.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Do you think your spouse has it? Are you like overanalyzing everybody in your life right now?
I don't think, yes, I am. I've been diagnosing several people, but my husband definitely does not have it. Although he can't relax at all. I don't think he has it.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about where people can find you, because, you do such amazing work, and I highly recommend anybody, if you've gotten through this episode, go listen to Jess on, the Hello Body podcast. I will actually put a link to it, because that's another fantastic conversation where we get into a lot more detail about what you do, which is amazing. But quickly here, like, where can people find you and reach out to you?
So, probably through Instagram's the best bet. And my handle's at thebodypositiveau.
I love talking with you.
You too. Thank you so much. And thanks for opening my eyes up to this potential thing that I've been living with.
It warms the cockles of my heart, because like so much, I think with so much of our own diagnosis is that feeling of like, oh my goodness, I feel like a lot of women might be struggling with this and have no idea, because I had no idea. Yeah. And so there's such a huge advocacy element to wanting to spread the word and Absolutely. Wanting to explain this Yes. in a way, because nobody ever explained it to me. I didn't understand No, it. We all seem to have the same misconceptions Yep. about it. And once you sort of make those connections, there's that desperate feeling of like, I want to help as many people as possible. Yes. So it's very rewarding to me that I can so like glad. Actually talk to you and Yes. feel like I'm like your sponsor.
Yeah. And you are my sponsor. Definitely.
There you have it. Thank you for listening. And I really hope you enjoyed this episode of the Women and ADHD podcast. Also, as you know, we ADHDers crave feedback, and I would really appreciate hearing from you, the listener. Please take a moment to leave me a review over on my website, womenandadhd.com, or on Apple Podcasts, or Audible, or whatever other platform you're using. And if that feels like too much, and I get it, then just take a few seconds to give me a 5-star rating. Boom, done. Or share this episode on your own social media to help reach more women who maybe have yet to discover and lean into this neurodivergent superpower, and they may be struggling and they don't even know why. Make sure to tag me on Instagram or Twitter. I'm at womenandadhd. If you are a woman who was diagnosed with ADHD in adulthood and you'd like to be interviewed as a guest on this podcast, please reach out to me. My email is womenandadhdpodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to know more about me, head over to worthitwithkatie.com. That's where I help other women with ADHD break free from the yo-yo dieting and binge eating cycle for good. I'll see you next week when I interview another amazing woman who has recently discovered that she is not lazy or crazy, but she has ADHD. And now she's on the path to understanding that neurodivergence and finally using it to her advantage. Take care till then.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.